pretty good.
Welcome, coaches, back to the Talking Split podcast. Our two guests have just looked at each other and like, what is the Larry David drop? Obviously, you two didn't listen last week. Come on, we're trying to grow the podcast audience. I'm Rob Calder once again, joined by our women's coach for the Victorian Metro program, Jenna O'Hay. Welcome, Jenna.
Hello.
And our men's coach for the Vic Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you both. Excited to be here for 2.0.
It has been a while.
Miss each other?
No, miss each other? No, thank you. I don't miss each other.
Yeah, I'm going to cry myself to sleep every night.
Me too.
When I'm out partying.
Super bad. I love this.
So much more fun in this podcast.
Oh, man.
I don't get a limited amount of drops for the actual pod itself, so I've got to be very careful about where I use them. But we've used one early on in the piece. But as we do jump back into the first time with you two for this year in particular, a couple of reminders before we jump into it. Auto downloads on the podcast from your app. If you're on Spotify or if you're on iTunes podcast, any like, share, retweets, those types of things, ratings, reviews, love them all. Even if you just want to send it an email and sort of say, whatever you're doing when you listen to this. We had an email literally 20 minutes ago from Gavin Ross, one of our listeners, that said, oh, I listen to you guys while I'm in the sauna. different, look, to be completely fair, but because of that. Just some sauna music for you, Gavin. As you listen to the podcast, we're trying to take this on a little bit of a different feel this year, obviously, as you can tell. Just a reminder, any coach shout-outs that you might have, if you want to thank a coach that is doing great things at your club or association, or it might be your coach to acknowledge, by all means, send them in and we'll throw them on here. You can be anonymous if you want to, if you don't want to be accused of trying to get more court time or anything like that. As a player shouting at your coach, generally speaking, most people tend to hate anonymously, but they don't tend to put their name to things that have any problems putting their names to things that are always the positives and that sort of stuff. Book club does start next week. Zoe is on the clock for this one, so she will come through with her book recommendations or reviews, so you can send those in. What would be great is if you record your own review of a book that you've potentially read and send that in, and we'll put that on the podcast. This is what we call outsourcing work, which is a genius move on my end more than anything else. We'll briefly touch on a couple of things that we spoke about last week. East Coast Challenge and Southern Cross for the Metro crew. How did that go from your end, Jenna?
Yeah, really good. ECC was great. Got to try and remember back. It seems like a lot's gone on since ECC.
A lot has gone on. It's been a hectic couple of months.
It was really good. Picked the 18 state team from that, obviously. Really happy with how our team's looking. And then SCC, it was good. We had four teams in both age groups, which is a lot, but a great opportunity for all those athletes, and they all worked hard and learnt a lot and developed throughout the weekend, so it was good.
Excellent. First experience with East Coast Challenge?
Great, I loved it.
Loved it?
Yeah, it was really good.
Did you?
I did not do the bus.
That's
I
why you loved it. That's right. That's why you loved it. As an old hat at the bus, fly, where you get the opportunity to do it. Coops, you did not fly to Albury for Cup. You did the drive. How did that go for your guys?
Look, can't sugarcoat it. Not great. We had results, which is always good, if you're looking at the outcomes. But I was, a bit disappointed in not meeting the high expectations that we put on our program, from off-court habits to coaching. It just felt like two tournaments at 95%, especially when I came back to SCC. Again, unfortunately, we had some coaching issues there and, nothing out of malice, just we've got some areas that we need to work on, around development and understanding of what it means to be in our program. And I look forward to tackling those, over the next coming months. So improvements to be made.
It's probably a good thing to find out now, though. Like, you don't want to find out halfway through the year that, look, we're not where we thought we would be at this point. At least January, you've got time to correct it, is probably the positive to come out of that. It's always nice to get a little bit of a wake up along the way. And it's like, well, look, these are the things we changed. Here's how we change it. And then you get to go and find out how it goes from there.
It's a great point. And I love those meetings. I love those moments of, getting in a room and Rob and I and Zoe and Craig, our admin guy, we sat in a room last week and started talking about FDP in particular around creating a more competitive environment, because we are down on size in country on the men's side in particular. And so we've got to find ways to get our better kids around each other more often, so that when they come to things like SCC, they don't get kind of punched in the face,
yep,
you know, metaphorically and physically.
Yeah, true. It's funny. Bestie was talking last week before we jumped on the podcast. He's like, oh, this 6'5" kid just walked into our trials that we've never seen before, and Zoe nearly punched him in the face. Yeah. Like, we don't have that kid walk into our trials. But we're scraping for anyone we can get with a little bit of size coming in. So it is one of those areas, and we'll probably talk about that in a little bit, actually, and probably leading into it. Very nicely done, the segue. We'll take it where we can. International Performance Camp. So both of you were involved on court in that camp. That was, I want to say, straight after Southern Cross, so the end of January that happened, which is about 2.5 weeks away, but it feels like it was just yesterday, I'm sure, for both of you, given the extensive workload. So the National Performance Camp held up in Canberra, what is, I suppose, the purpose of the camp, Coops? Like, what are they looking for at this camp?
Future Boomers and future Opals. Yep. Like, it really is kind of that clean cut in that it's not an all-star camp. It's not about bringing the best kids there. It really is about, you know, taking some punts on some LTAD athletes that, you know, we think are going to project to being able to represent our country at the top level one day. So, you know, there was talk about we needed to see some more size and length this time around on both the men's and the women's side. They really wanted to see some fresh faces. So, you know, when the guys were sitting down and looking at selections, you know, there was discussions around, you know, who had been in green and gold before, who potentially has, you know, some other camps coming up. So obviously it's a World Cup year for, you know, the Crocs and the Sapphires. So, yeah, a lot of fresh faces. You know, there was two young bigs on the men's side that we hadn't seen previously. You know, one was a 6'11 kid who'd come from cricket, a fast bowler. Wow. Another one was a 6'9 front rower from rugby. So
it's not often we get the converts from other sports. Yeah. Like, normally they leave our sport and go on, like, go to the high performance world in something else.
That's, yeah,
it's rare.
Yeah, it really was. So again, this is the beauty of that camp. You know, that we're able to see these two young men in particular come over and you know, show what they could do, and yeah, gives it a real level of excitement when we get to do that.
Yep. How did you find it, Jenna? Because you were part of the selection panel, trying to get all of this in. Like, you've got so many different states, kids that you potentially haven't seen. How did you go trying to make a case for one person over another person when you maybe don't know how to compare them in that space?
Yeah, I guess it was a bit funny for me. I started in this role at under 16 nationals, so I knew that age group quite well, but the age group above I hadn't seen. So I couldn't really compare my athletes in Vic Metro, for example, to other athletes. I could only speak for what I knew. But it was the same on the women's side, that it was length and height, because we're struggling in that aspect, so we wanted to see some new faces. And yeah, I thought it was a really good camp, and for me it was my first time on the coaching side at one of those camps. I'd been at many as an athlete, and I found it more exhausting as a coach, to be honest.
So you've hit on a very interesting one. Like, Zoe will tell you straight out, she's coaching fit. Like, she doesn't claim to be able to run a triathlon anytime soon, but she's like, I can coach on court for a whole day. But she said the same thing. When she got off court, she was just exhausted from the whole thing. What was it, do you think, Jenna, that made it so tiring on that end?
A lot of different things. I think I've learned that coaches love to meet. And there's lots of meetings. So for me, that was quite tiring. I'm just not used to that. And I think being on court, trying to get the effort, not so much effort, but just get the level that we required at the camp, the communication. We were coaching a lot of that, which I think is quite strenuous as coaches. And there was a lot of coaches, but, you know, we were getting after the athletes on court, just trying to get them to the level of what an Opals camp would be, so that they know what they're going towards. And so I think being on court and doing that, I'm not used to that, so that was very tiring. And then just the meetings, there's a lot. I don't know, how do you feel about that? Because you're a coach who probably does a lot of meetings.
I do. Yeah. Anybody that works with me would would tell you that, yes, I do have a lot of meetings. I don't know. I like the meetings. I like dissecting. I like evaluating. I like preparing. So I guess I'm a bit of a meeting geek. So I'm used to them.
That's okay. I mean, there's room for both. You know, it is one of those areas where it is, depending on your personality type, you might really love the meetings and let me know what Coops is like. Loves to meet for the sake of meeting. Like, hey, we have a 4-minute window here. What can we discuss? Yeah, these things. Like, let's get through it. And that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. You just got to pick your moments, I suppose.
Yeah, whereas I need that alone time to be able to process everything that's gone on, not just constantly meeting about different things. So, yeah, that was a balance that I needed to find.
Well, and it's tough too, in particular early in the camp when you're still trying to learn names. Like, you don't know every kid that's walked in. Obviously, you're familiar with the ones that you work with all the time, so that's not so much an issue. But you're trying to work out, geez, who was that 6'11 kid that just walked past? What was his name again? How do I try and integrate this? You want to try and build relationships with players as well, which tends to be done off the court. You don't tend to build a relationship with a player as you're talking about their spacing in offense. Like, that doesn't really resonate, but it's the off-court stuff as well that becomes really important, I find.
Yeah, I found that it was the rebounding before training started or as they're cooling down afterwards, going down and chatting, if there wasn't a coach's meeting straight after training. But I feel like that's when you can really, start and build those relationships and the rapport with the athletes. Because as you said, on court, it's more just instructions and then you're on to the next one. Dining hall, sort of chatting with them just so that you can get to know them a little bit so that they feel comfortable coming to you.
Yeah, and there's just so much going on at those camps. As you said, obviously the boys' program and the girls' program both running at the same time. So a bunch of kids. Like, how many kids were there, Coops, over the course of those couple of days?
It's 24, I think. 24 boys, 24 girls.
I believe so.
Yep. Roughly the same amount of coaches?
Yeah, it was 38 coaches or something like that. So BA had really put a lot of time and effort and money into this camp to propel it forward and try and give it some more gravitas and give it some more reputation around being, a real high point on the HPP calendar. And they did that. I thought it was fantastic, and you could see that. Like, you watch footage of, a junior national team camp or even a national team camp at the US, when they're Colorado, wherever their home base is. And there's staff everywhere. So a player has someone for everything. There's no point that a player can turn around and be like, oh, I can't see someone for an injury, or I can't see someone to talk to, or I can't find someone to rebound for me. Like, everything was taken care of to allow these athletes to just literally focus on being the best basketballer they could for 4 days. And it was fantastic. It was a really good environment.
It could, and that is a really cool thing to be a part of too. Like, you get a feel for the camp as you walk in straight away. It's like, oh, this has gone up a level from what I would normally be dealing with in that space. Like, sort of curious more on your end, Jenna, than anything else. Like, you've come from that Opals environment as well. Was that the focus? Like, we want to try and make this as close as we possibly can to an Opals environment for these players, just to find out which ones. Because I don't want to say you don't baby them by any means, but you certainly want to push to a point where it's like, this is not going to be easy. Is that the goal out of it?
We're not trying to break them by any means, but we do want to see who can rise to that level, because there's levels to get to. There's the MPC, then there's a Crocs or a Sapphires, then you're going Gems and Emus, and then you're going Opals Boomers. So, and it increases each time with the level of effort, intent, concentration, mental capabilities, being able to push through things. So, yeah, we were definitely trying to get that across. And I think we had a few sessions that were a bit lighter. There was the physical testing, which I think was great to bring that back. It was really good to see them push themselves. And there was a shooting session. So I think those two sessions were a bit lighter compared to what a Crocs or a Sapphires or a Opals or a Boomers camp would be. But when they were on court, they were going for it. It was high intensity. Herbie did a great job of running the camp and making sure each session we built on things. The green and gold game is always just my favourite bit of a camp. There's been players who have made a world champs or an Olympics from that green and gold game at a camp. So that's always my favourite bit. And yeah, it was good to replicate those types of things in this MPC camp.
Yeah, also, and we'll come back to the green and gold game in a second, because I know you obviously coached one of the teams. But looking at the camp itself, so what was being taught? How was it being layered? Those types of things. So, Coos, we'll start with you on your side. So what was the content of the camp, I suppose, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, it's really about implementing a base style of play that marries up to green and gold in terms of this is the BA or green and gold style of play. This is how we want to play as Australian teams. So kind of putting down a base foundation. So it's not trying to put in tricky plays and things like that. It's about giving them a base and then coaching them hard in it. And again, kind of building on what Jenna was talking about is seeing who could rise, who could, you know, Pat Hunt talks about it, international learner, you know, listen, understand, do quickly, who can take on information in short periods and then be able to take it to the floor at the level that, that we're expecting. So, you know, Robbie and Ash do a fantastic job of doing exactly what Herbie does, you know, in creating an environment, you know, that the coaches are critiquing effort first. You know, we're trying to get them up to that level and then coaching the detail. So that kind of is where it started. We had a big focus on free throws in this camp. Obviously, we've been talking about a lot. I've spoken about on the pod, you know, yes, we won Asia, but we're the worst free throw shooting team there. So all pre-practice was dedicated to free throws. Basically, you had to get your 10 made free throws. I think some days we had the opportunity to go up to 20, a little bit extra time. They talk a lot at green and gold level, which I think is fantastic. It's an old Yorick Michaels quote around practice begins when the first player hits the floor. And that's that time to be able to get out and work on those sorts of things. So that also adds to that environment of relationship building, but understanding practice habits, understanding green and gold habits. You don't just kind of walk in, you know, throw your shoes down. It's you're in, shoes are on, you're on the floor and we're going. Then in terms of more of the basketball, heavy stuff on full court and half court shell. So building, you know, our tough man-to-man defensive foundations. We know that's how we want to play in green and gold. That's how we've had success on both the men's and women's side. So we've got to keep that at the forefront of the mind. We had Jacob Jacomas come in as a special guest coach and he focused on teaching that. So that was great to get a different voice and, you know, someone who's just come off the NBL. Did a lot of positional work. You know, we're still trying to help players understand that there are specific things to their position that, that need to be developed, that need to be honed. So we had positional work. We worked on defending screens, the ball screen in particular on the side. We're on a hard hedge. In the middle is a flat show. So some aggressive things there that kind of align with how we want to play. And then offensively, you know, yes, we want space and pace. And then we want to be able to flow into some sort of two-side, three-side motion, which, again, is, you know, really popular, obviously, around the world right now. A lot of teams running that base motion. And then, yeah, so once that was in, it was, okay, let's coach the kids up and let's see who can, in particular, put themselves in positions to succeed.
Yep. So it's a real, like listening to that, it's a real chicken and the egg type thing. Is does the skill set matter first or does the structure matter first in those types of things? And I think you're coming into a new environment. Which one was more important? Just out of curiosity. Like,
yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think when you're talking about MPC and the long-term lens, it's really about putting in the foundation so they can see what this thing is like and can they find ways to succeed in it? Can the athletes kind of figure some stuff out on the fly through their own ability to decipher the information and read the defense and all those sorts of things that we know that make elite basketball players. Whereas like for me with the Crocs, and we've got a camp coming up, that one's a lot more around, okay, well, we're picking particular athletes around what's your skill set, what's your size, you know, how are you going to fit, and we'll tinker things around them so they can feel confident that, yeah, I'm a 3-and-D wing or I'm a back to the basket post player, that if we pick you, that we're going to let those things shine through whatever system we decide to implement.
Yeah, makes sense. What about on the women's side, Jenna? What were the real sort of structures, I suppose, of those sessions?
Heavy, heavy focus defensively, yep. And physicality on defense. I think Herbie went away with the gems and turnovers in the backcourt were a big thing for that group in particular, and that was not being able to handle that physicality defensively. So it was two-way teaching with offensively being able to handle that physicality, and defensively being physical, getting up and in, that full court pressure, which was a huge focus right through camp. And again, defensive focus, shell, half court, full court. In terms of the structure, same. Started off with free throws, make 10. We let us know how many it took you to make 10. So we charted all that right through the camp. It was positional work to start with generally. And then it was straight into sort of your one-on-one, your two-on-one decision making, and then playing at the end. So it was a really good camp and they really got after it. And it was really good to see what was implemented in practice to then, I know we're going to talk about the green and gold game, but then implement it into that green and gold game, and who can translate that. It's all well and good to be able to do it in a one-on-one drill, but then to be able to put it into a game and seeing who really translate those skill development into the games was really fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think you can put as much as you want into the drills, so to speak, but until it's live, you don't really know. And how many times do we start a drill in a disadvantaged situation? So the offense has that advantage of, I don't need to necessarily be physical here, I'm already ahead, I've just got to go score. But then you get into the game situation and there's just so many different like stimulus, I suppose, for lack of a better term, of where's the help defense now? Do I have the ability to kick the ball ahead? Do I have to cross split to be able to try and get the ball there? Where do I start our offense? Right, all these types of things now start to come into it, and you can't replicate the 5-on-5 stuff. So, I mean, you coached one of the teams in the green and gold game, Jenna. Did you win?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Why did you win?
We had a huge defensive focus.
Yep.
So we were full court. I was very fortunate to have some very good full court defenders in our team. And I pushed them and challenged them to be up the floor every single time. And then I had some really good athletic, high IQ wings who were able to pick off some passes when those guards got into trouble or go trap when they could. And then were able to get stops, and then offense just ran off that. So we were very fortunate with some of the bodies that we had in our group, but anything I asked, they went out and delivered and really translated everything that we had taken from training into that game. So it was really pleasing to see.
Just out of curiosity, nervous before you took that game? Well, not too bad.
Probably.
Yeah, just didn't realize it at the time. One of those sorts of things where it's like, eyes on me now, I've got to give direction.
Yeah, I feel like I know the game of basketball pretty well. I yep. haven't coached a lot, but yep. I feel like it does come quite naturally. I just need the confidence behind me, which I don't always have.
Yep, absolutely. So you spoke about the defensive focus in particular. What were sort of two or three of the main takeaways that made those players good defensively up the floor? Like, the physicality is going to be one for sure. What else?
Fitness.
Yeah. Yep.
You need to be fit to be able to play physical, strong, up and in defense. And not everyone is at that level from what I saw. And those that were at that level just excelled over everyone else.
Yep.
And that was directly translated from what I saw from the yo-yo into what they could do on the court. So as much as it's those fitness testings like, oh, why do we have to do this? It does translate onto the yep. court. And then I think just intent and competitiveness. Like, there's some athletes on the girls' side who you can just see it in their eye that they're gonna go get that stop. They might have had a turnover and I'm like, go get the ball back, go get up on her, and she's like, yeah. And then she goes up, she gets a steal, she goes, gets layup, she's feeling good about herself. So I think it was fitness, the physicality, and that intent and competitiveness that is hard to teach. Some people just have that in them.
That's what I was going
to
say. It's one of those areas that you can't really bring, like, you can maybe bring it out of people that have it in there already, but it's really hard if you don't have that just sheer willingness and determination to know, I'm going to go and do this, to try and find it. Like, have you ever seen anyone that maybe hasn't had it that got it, I suppose, in that space?
I think it also comes with a little bit of confidence.
Yeah, right.
As you see things start working for you, the things you've been working on at training is then translating to games, and then it starts to click. Then you see them slowly start building that competitiveness and intent up as well. So I think it comes a lot with confidence. I think especially on the female side, we are high achievers and we want to be perfect. If we're not, we can sometimes take a step back. So I think that plays into it a lot. I don't know how it is on the boys, men's side, but I feel like that is a big thing on the women's side.
Well, it's amazing how many times someone's having a bit of a rough game, all of a sudden they make a shot and they start defending again. It's like, what? Where does this come from? Why was this not your constant all the way through? Like, your offense is going to ebb and flow realistically, whether you're getting good shots, bad shots, whether you're just making shots, you see the ball go through the net, those types of things. Your defense should really be your constant, though. Like, that's the one that, if nothing else is going right, you can still go and dog the ball, turn it in the back, or pin it to a sideline, whatever your rules are. That, for mine, is just one of the given traits.
Yeah, this is where I think the environment plays into it. Yep. That I think there's players that have the competitiveness inside them but don't necessarily get to bring it out or get it nurtured to the level to be able to be good at, like, a green and gold camp because the environment isn't competitive enough. You know, we're not scoring on everything. We're not making this a win and lose environment. We're not kind of pushing the athletes to get out of their comfort zone in everything they do to have that winner and loser. And, you know, if you're not doing it on a regular basis, then it's probably going to sit dormant, in, you know, and that's not fair to the athlete to then be turning around and saying, oh, well, yeah, I don't think they're really competitive. It's like, well, how much are you putting them in an environment to see it? So I think that's something that us as coaches have to be really wary of. And then just to double down on what Jenna was talking about with the conditioning aspect, it's not VJBL fit. You know, it's real fit. It's being able to understand how to prioritize strength and conditioning on top of the way that you're playing, because the next level is, you just cannot put into words the leap that it is. And so the athletes that have gone away and really worked on their bodies and developed a tank, it was the exact same thing on the boys' side. They really elevated themselves.
How do they go about building that tank? Like, we're not saying just go on a 15K run or anything like that, but how do they get specific fit for a camp in particular?
Yeah, well, one of the great things that the BA guys do, and obviously there's a lot to do with you know, Ash and kind of Sarah doing a bit, is there's once they're selected, they get like an S&C, what'd you say, like schedule, like, yeah, like session format that they have to...
And then they have to journal it, right?
Yeah, so they've got to complete it, they've got to journal it, and they've got to communicate it as they go to the guys at the COE. So basically they get this, yeah, kind of little, almost like preseason type handout from those guys. And it's like, hey, you know, to come to this camp, it's 4 days. You'll never have done anything like this before. You know, you need to be ready, fit, and here's how we're going to help you do that. So that's a really nice way for them to be like, oh, we're not going to throw you to the wolves. Like, here's something. If you follow this, you're going to be in good stead. And I think this year, from the feedback that we got from the guys up there, that this was one of the best years in terms of compliance. And we saw that on the floor compared to last year. Last year, I think by day two, the boys side, we had 50% of the athletes were off the floor. Like, it was just, it was mind-boggling. But the compliance was poor. And then this year it was great and everyone was on the floor. And, you know, it really connected to what a good camp it was.
Yep, absolutely. So on the green and gold side, on the green and gold game on the men's side, what were some of the big things that showed out to you, Coops?
Yeah, I was in a different position to Jenna. Obviously, with my role with the Crocs, the cohort that was there was basically a lot of the athletes that we'll choose from for this year's World Cup. So I actually sat and watched in a more of a talent ID standpoint. So I was taking notes on athletes from a selection perspective. What showed out to me was a good intent on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of the times we're able to, you know, build a wall in the half court and make it difficult to create a split or create an advantage. Not as good in D-trans. D-trans is something that still needs a lot of work, both the green and gold and in our program. It's something that we've been talking about quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. Offensively, yeah, you know, We've spoken a lot about, you know, scanning for effective decisions. You know, it's become an offensive non-negotiable for us. And it was interesting to see who were the players that had that ability, who could look through the primary defender and see what the help was doing, both with the ball in the hands and without the ball in the hands. And the players that could do that, those were the ones that kind of, yeah, stood out. More so from a guard and wing perspective. And it was nice to see the size being utilised. You know, guys were trying to seal down low. You know, guards wanted to throw it in there. It didn't happen probably as much as we should have, but there were some big bodies.
Show me a coach that is ever happy with how often the ball goes into the post. They don't exist.
No, that's right. So that was nice too, just to see, you know, so many, you know, big athletes on the court and trying to play with that level of physicality and to own the paint. So, it was a fun game to sit back and just watch.
So you've both spoken about the need for size and those types of things at these types of camps with the projection of future Boomers and Opals. Size isn't the only thing, though. Like, there's still room for the small guards that have great IQ, great skill sets and those types of things. How do you go about identifying those, Jenna, in that sort of an environment? What are the things that have them stand out amongst all the other guards?
I think it was what Coops was just talking about, that decision-making is really important. And what we saw on the women's side in particular was coming off side on balls and only seeing either the drive or the roller, being able to kick it back to the person rising out of the corner or seeing opposite. It just seemed like a lot of players there had very narrow vision. So being able to see the whole floor, being able to see the help defenders, who's helping off where and who could be open, definitely the players who could see that really they shined at camp, and those that didn't had a lot of sort of just silly turnovers
clunky possessions. Yeah. Or it just didn't quite work. Yep.
Yeah. So those guards or wings or forwards who could do those things really stood out at camp, in my opinion.
Yep. What's, just out of curiosity, Coops, what's the order in which you come off an on-ball screen that you would start reading defensively? So are you reading your defender first? Are you reading the screener's defender first? Are you reading the help defender? Like, what would you tell players?
Yeah, I think, you know, talking about kind of the quiet eye and thinking about taking as much information as possible, I think you should start the furthest away. So I think you should be looking at the tertiary help first. And you see that now with the way a lot of teams defend the ball screen, with like really loading up the paint quite early. And so guards, I think probably Luka is probably one of the best in the world that does it, you know, that he can come off and on the first bounce, see that guy committed 2 feet in the paint to catch the roller or tag the roller. And that thing is fired to the weak side corner or wherever it may go. And now you're getting uncontested threes. And that's really, you know, just the gravity of the ball screen and how it's, you know, manipulating off-ball defenders to generate an open three. So I think it's best to try and help the athletes understand kind of furthest away first and then come back. Because if you go the other way, it just kind of plays into what Jenna's talking about, where, okay, all I'm worried about is my player, have I beaten them? Then all of a sudden I beat them and then the next player steps up and it's like, oh, you know, what do I do now? Or the roller's taken away, whatever. So I think it's that almost a little bit like kind of start with the end in mind and come back.
So we'll continue on that. So if you are the end in mind and you're the player on the opposite side of the floor necessarily, as someone's coming off an on-ball screen and you're on offense, what are the things you're telling players on the other side of the floor to start looking at, Jenna? Is it like movement? Is it shot prep? What would you start telling players in that space?
Yeah, I think you've always got to be ready to shoot. I think we always talk about early help cut. So if you see your player that's defending you lose vision, that's a great time to cut. But we also need spacing. So if you're a good shooter, I'm locked, loaded, ready to catch that thing in the corner and let it fly.
Yep, and that's just such a valuable shot too. Like we saw it, we were just talking before about the Opals that were played over the last couple of days, like the spacing required. If you can't stick a corner three, you are in trouble at that international level. And that wasn't just the Opals. That was everyone across the board. It's
such a big part of modern basketball.
Yeah.
You need to be able to stick, particularly a corner three.
Yep. Yep.
That needs to be bread and butter for every athlete that's coming through these days.
Well, yep. And I mean, the made shot is nice, don't get me wrong, but the need to create a hard closeout that can force scramble rotations, that's where it really comes in. But defenders are smart enough now to know that's not a shooter. I'm not going to that. So all of a sudden the D is
you're open for a reason.
Exactly. I've got a drop for that, but that will be a drop next week. The free throws, you both sort of hit on them, need to get them up before the game, before the training session in particular. We saw why in the international level. I think Germany yesterday when they played Brazil, this is the Tuesday. This happened on the Monday, obviously. But I think Germany had something along the lines of about 40 free throws in comparison to Brazil's 20-odd from memory. And one of the main proponents from the foul line was Sabali from Germany, who had separated his shoulder like 4 days earlier and came back to play the game. You could see the difference at the start of the game to the end of the game, where she just wasn't comfortable with her shoulder anymore. She was trying to make it work and those types of things. But Brazil just thought, we'll just keep fouling you. We don't care. Like it's a free possession for us. If we know you're not going to make free throws, we're good. That comes out as a stop still. So it's interesting to see, or to hear, sorry, the emphasis on free throws at that level, because I think we've all been to a national championships and just cringed at the free throw percentage at the end of it.
Oh yeah, I know we're going to talk a little bit about nationals in a bit, but yeah, that really came back to haunt us. Obviously, talk about later, but yeah, like the same thing, you know, in Asia, and you're talking about getting to the line, you know, multiple times, only shooting 50%, like just puts so much pressure on you, you know. To
well, not to mention, it's not easy to get to the line in international basketball.
Oh, that's right.
But also, the pressure that it puts on the scoreboard as well, making those free throws.
Yeah.
You can just, whether you're down, you can keep it close if you're making, but if you're only shooting 50%, then the scoreboard pressure, there is none anymore.
Yeah.
It just impacts the game in so many more ways than you think about just missing that one or two.
100%. And then all of a sudden too, like the fouling, like intentional fouling by the opposition comes into play. Like all of a sudden they've added another weapon around, okay, well, if these guys can't shoot free throws and maybe there's one guy on the floor that we're worried about, if anybody else catches the ball, just foul them.
And then that keeps time on the clock as well.
Yeah.
Clock stopping and then they get more possessions too.
Yeah.
We've alluded to the fact, national championships. So that was up in Ballarat. Obviously, both of you head coaching both the teams. Coops, you've been there a couple of times now. What was it like this time around compared to your last couple?
Yeah, the tournament remains just a fantastic event to have on the calendar. You know, you're talking about players in a really critical time of their development, a critical time of their journey. Getting them into a national championships for under-20s is fantastic. You know, to compete against each other, you know, there was a ton of NBL coaches, WNBL coaches, recruiters, you know, Liam Santa Maria from the Next Star program is that, you know what I mean? Like, it's a really good identification event and something that can propel athletes forward straight out of it. You know, there could be a college scholarship, there could be a development player position or a training player position in the NBL. So from that perspective, it's excellent. It was kind of selfishly, it was outstanding to see Victoria back on top, you know, like clean sweep of the medals. It's where we want to be, it's where we think we should be, you know, being kind of like the mecca down here. Was really proud of all four of those teams and the way that they went about it throughout the week. As soon as we got there, they looked like the best teams. They performed like the best teams. They acted like the best teams. And that was, you know, that was awesome, you know, especially from, you know, at all our positions, you know, us three sitting in the room of the work that we do behind the scenes to kind of get the kids there. And then to get them there and see them perform is just, you know, it's one of the reasons why we coach. You know, when talking about the Navy team, it's difficult. You know, full transparency. It was a hard one for me this time around. You know, I'm very lucky to have the opportunity that I have at the moment in green and gold. And so I have particular standards. Particular standards around, you know, how I'm coaching and the things that I'm looking at. And I struggle to kind of change my expectations around the team that we had.
I think it's called white light fever, Coops.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I had some moments. Yeah, that's my competitiveness, so there you go.
Can you tell us about that one time out?
Which one? Which one?
9 a.m. game,
oh,
Dead
yeah.
Quiet Stadium.
Yeah, 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 big crowd, 9 a.m., Ballarat, the Navy team. Who were we playing? Can't remember who we were playing, but yeah, I was. My volume went up. I also was testing the sturdy nature of the floor with the chair. Now I didn't swear. Everything I was saying was very solution focused. I was just probably a little bit louder than normal.
And then what did the stadium end up doing?
Yeah, the young man on the music decided to start blaring the music at 9 a.m. to drown me out. So it was
touché.
Yeah, probably a good decision by him. But yeah, you know, like it's, the Navy team's so good. We've had, you know, one or two players come from that team to go on to do special things. You know, I'm really lucky. Like my first year with it, David Okwara obviously goes on the NBL. Well, sorry, COE NBL. My next year is Johnny Furphy, you know, NBA Global, Kansas, now climbing up draft boards. Yeah, and we had a couple of guys this year who we think are talented enough to potentially go on and do some things like that. So in that respect, it's fantastic. But then also we get, you know, four or five kids that by day two are just deer in headlights, like, I don't know what this is. I wasn't ready for this. I think I want to go home. And then there's Coops, like,
you know, on 9 a.m.
9 a.m. Yeah. In your face.
Yeah, trying to yell over the top of Carly Rae Jepsen that's playing it in Ballarat Stadium.
That's right.
It is. It's a tough gig. Like, and like with that Navy team in particular, there's a real slant towards bottom age or haven't been to a Nationals before. So you talk about it. Usually when you go as a top age kid, life is good. You're at the top of the tree, so to speak, but you come in as a bottom age. It's a very different world, in particular at 20s where you're not dealing with junior athletes anymore. You were dealing with adults, really, in that space. So you can't just bully ball your way to a win in that environment. But also, if you've never been to a Nationals, it's quite confronting to go for the first time. It's like, this is what this is supposed to be like. You know, I've been trying to make this team for potentially 4 or 5 years. I didn't realise what this was all the way through. What was it like for you, Jenna, in your first experience, like as a head coach of a state team?
Yeah, first team I've ever coached. I had a lot of fun with it. It was a really great group of women. I really enjoyed them. And our big focus was development and improvement. It's the development team. So we focused a lot of our film on us and ways that individually they could get better and as a team they could get better. And with each game, I couldn't have been prouder of how they took on everything, implemented what they could. And by the end of the week, they were playing really terrific basketball and beat WA to come fifth. So it was a really great result. And I saw, improvements in each of the 12 girls on the team. And as you said, it they haven't all come through the SDP program. So there was little things that they didn't know. I would tell them, which I thought was a simple instruction of not helping from strong side corner. And then it would continue to happen and happen. And it wasn't until I showed it on the film, they're like, like just the terminology of round things. They just hadn't learnt or heard those things before. So really being able to break it down both whenever we could get a practice court or showing it on film so that they could see it and then action it in the next game was really important. And as I said, I felt like each of the 12 girls improved and got better as the week went on, and I hope they had a great experience.
How many meetings did you have?
About one a day, I think.
And that was okay?
Look.
If there was a way to not have that one meeting, I wouldn't have had that one meeting.
No, but as the development team, I did think it was important with those film sessions to really get those done. The one day, just the hub didn't happen to work that day and we couldn't show film, and that was by far our worst game. And so it showed the benefit of them being able to see themselves and being able to explain what we were seeing and what we were wanting. So showing what we didn't want and then showing an example of how we wanted it done. It was that one game that we weren't able to show film that by far the worst.
Yeah, just a little bit of chaos
that
comes when you don't get your stuff in place.
Anarchy! Yep.
It really is, though. Like, when you get taken out of your schedule, like, it just throws everything out. Yeah. And I think those Nationals are largely based around schedules. Like, you know what time your game is, so you know what time your training is, you know what time your rehab and your recovery session will be. All those types of things come into it, and just a little small tweak can just throw a massive spanner in the works for what you're doing. Just curious, what were the biggest things that you learned out of the week, Jenna? Like, given it was your first team coaching experience, what were the biggest things that you took away from it?
Prep is important.
Yep.
Thinking about January, it wasn't the ideal prep I felt for the Navy team. I was pretty much away from the whole of January, really. Yeah. So I met with them in Ballarat, and so I wish we just had of been able to have a bit more time together. It is important when you have a week tournament that you can have that good prep, so you're not having to put things in on the fly as the week is going, and that's always going to happen. I understand that, but I just wish, yeah, we had have had a bit more time leading into the tournament. Just the timing of it, though, just didn't work out. So I thank Joe Bowie for really helping me get a few training sessions in before we did go. Learnings, timeouts are important. Being able to stop momentum. I remember one game in particular, I probably didn't stop momentum when I needed to. So that's a big one for me, being new as a coach and how you can really use those to your advantage. Rotating 12 players is really difficult. Being a development team, I wanted to make sure that everyone was developing. And in order to develop, you do need court time. But being able to get everyone on and still trying, it's a tournament, you're still trying to win as well. So balancing those two things is something that is a challenge. And looking ahead to our 18 state team and our 16 state teams, which will have 12, and how those coaches manage and have the hard conversations and what they'll do throughout the tournament, I think is a challenge. It will be interesting to see how each of the individual coaches and coaching staff manage that come 18s and 16s nationals.
Yeah, and it is hard. Like, you want to keep everyone happy and, you know, happy people play and vice versa on those types of things, but you also want to win games. So I think, I mean, you were both probably fairly lucky in that you didn't have injuries sort of come into play for your tournament largely. So you actually had 12 healthy players, which doesn't usually happen in tournaments either. You normally get two or three that have run into each other or a sore or whatever the case may be. So it might have been easier to manage if you did have injuries, ironically enough.
Well, we did. Lockie Harvey ended up rolling his ankle.
Yep.
And this is where the kind of 11 and 12 really helped us, because we were able to say, okay, yeah, we're going to shelve you, I think, I think it might have been a day. It was at least one game. And then, yeah, it might end up being two. I can't remember. But, yeah, it was really nice to have that luxury. Be like, yeah, cool, okay, we'll stash you. You know, get that right. We've got some backup. And then we bring you back when you're ready, instead of being like, oh, man, what are we going to do? And how are we going to manage this? And now we're down a player. So I think that's where it really becomes the benefit.
Yep.
Yeah.
How do you approach that conversation? Because we all know what Lockie Harvey's like. Doesn't exactly like taking a game off if he has the opportunity to play. How do you approach that with hey, we need to situate at this one so that you're going to be right for these ones?
Yeah, definitely not. Like, talk about a competitor. It really is about, firstly, it's about the relationship you've created prior to that. And I've really enjoyed getting to know him as a young man and as a hooper. So we have a good connect. And then it's about just being honest. So we brought Lockie in, to the staff room and just sat him down and just said, hey, mate, this is the information we've been given by the physio. This is what we think is best for you and for the team going forward. And then kind of put it to him. And of course, high character young man. He's like, yep, of course, you could see. He's like, no, I want to play. And I said to him, I'm like, I can see it in your face. I know you want to play. He's like, yeah, but, he understood, and he understood that was what was best. And, he was just bought in. And there are examples, we talk a lot about buy-in, having teams that are bought in. And that was an example of it. So it was a credit to him and again, the bonus of having the extra athletes there.
Yeah, absolutely. So tactically, what were the biggest things you noticed at the tournament, Coops, like that sort of stood out from you with how teams played, in particular how you would compare it to NPC that just went on?
Switching. Everybody switched. Switched like crazy. And interesting to see not that many sophisticated counters to switching. It was more, everyone just kind of just tried to grind through it, which I thought was quite interesting. Frustrating from my perspective, asking for more slipping and screening your own man and things like that we obviously weren't comfortable doing. And just with that much switching going on, like not seeing athletes just recognize it, be like, oh, okay, well, here's some more switching. We've seen it now for three games. Okay, let's go do this, or let's use this. So I think that's an interesting one for us going away and talking about development and what we need to work on, because the game is just going to keep switching. Everyone wants 5'9" super mobile athletes on the floor that can switch and shoot. And so it's not something we can ignore. So that was a big one. We weren't ready for the physicality. Coming back to the free throws, we spoke a lot about the three-point battle, and I've spoken about it on the podcast. I learned that from my mentor, Justin Schuler, around how to beat the USA in second chance points, points off turnovers, and the free throw battle, and how that aligns, especially to a team that's not necessarily as athletic as, you know, when you're talking about like the Navy team versus Queensland. And we had two games where our foul discipline was appalling, and we were not physical enough when playing in the paint. And so two separate games, both SA and WA, they were 30 from 38 from the free throw line. And I think one game we were like 7 for 9, and the other game we were 12 for 15 or something like that. So the fact that other teams were aggressive, they were physical, they could protect the basketball in a crowd, they could get themselves to the free throw line and punish teams, that's something that we need to have a look at, especially on the countryside. Playing with pace, everybody probably in Australia now knows that I like to play with pace, and it continued to be a weapon, stop and run. And hearing Jenna and her team at MPC, and that was the best form of basketball for them, I think is the best basketball for Australia, in that it is a defensive focus that we're up and in, we can junk it up, we want to turn you over, and we want to get out and use our competitive athletes and run. And when we're doing that in MPC, we look our best. When we're doing that in a Victoria jersey, we're doing our best. When we're in a green and gold jersey, that's our best. So I think those are some things that really, stood out to me.
Yep, absolutely. So what about on your side, Jenna? Was it any different, or was there anything else?
Compared to MPC camp, it's not as if there was a lot of full court dog the ball type of defense. It was more maybe like a half court press back to a zone. There was a lot of zone on the women's side. I feel like defensively we probably, as a whole nationals on the women's side, not up to the standard defensively. I think teams could score at will, so then it was like, okay, let's go to a zone, let them ping from their three-point line, which wasn't always successful. I know we jammed an under on every ball screen because dribbling it behind a screen and shooting it is a tough shot on the women's side. So we found that when we did execute it to be really effective, and then load up on the weak side and then one-way closeouts, the three-point shooting wasn't terrific. There was one girl from ACT who could light it up, and one girl from WA who was quite good as well. But other than that, Alistair as well from Queensland, but there wasn't a lot. So you could really pack off. So I think that is point of emphasis on the women's side. Just three-point shooting is super important because you can just clog the paint and one-way closeouts, you're pretty good. I think there was a lot of just re-penetration into congestion on the women's side. That was interesting to watch.
Yep. How did you go motivating your group? Teams knew they were the Navy team, so they're not expected to go in and win it by any means. How did you go motivating your group and keeping everyone on the same page throughout?
I don't know how much you can share about individual teams, I guess, but we had points of emphasis for each game, and we had a really poor game against SA. So after the game, I went to the group and I said, look, I'm giving you 3 points of emphasis to win basketball games, and we're not getting them done. I think a lot of them were around winning the rebounds, which we never did. I can't even remember the other ones. So I was like, what is it that you need to win a basketball game? Go away and think about it and come back to me. And so the next day they came back to me and said that the word was trust. So they needed to trust each other to be there defensively for each other. They needed to trust in the coaching staff about what we're implementing, what the scout is. They needed to trust each other that they were going to box out and rebound. They were going to trust each other to run. They were going to trust each other to play really good defense. And so that was the word that we used from that game forward. And it was a godsend. They just trusted in all of us. And it it was fun to coach them in that way. So once we sort of got that word as a team, the motivation just always came back to that. Are we trusting each other? Are you in this together? And that, yeah, propelled us to fifth.
Do you think they didn't trust each other, or they just weren't aware that they could trust each other beforehand?
As I said, there wasn't a lot of prep.
Yeah.
So true. I think a little bit of both, and they just really had to buy in. And once they bought in all together, when they had that players only meeting, I think that really helped. And then we're able to really cultivate that and bring it all together. And yeah, it was a real joy.
Yeah, cool. What about you, Coos, with the men's group?
Yeah, so we go through, you know, our kind of culture activities as much as possible prior to the campaign. So, you know, do some get to know your game so they can start developing some connection, which hopefully, you know, gets to a point of trust and familiarity where they're more inclined to sacrifice
for
each other.
You said that word really well. I really struggle with it. Familiarity. Oh. I'm impressed.
Thanks.
He's quite familiar with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we did that. We talk about the values of our program, you know, enjoy professionalism, you know, effort and honour. And then we have the guys give us their definition of that. So now we get some behaviours around, you know, what we should act like and you know, perform like. So there's some things that most coaches are pretty clued in to. Probably the one thing we do, which is a little bit different, is we do talk about some of the guys that have come out of the Navy team that have gone on to do some cool things. Like I remember we were lucky, Phoenix was training at MSAC when we had one of our camps there, and Luke Rosendale came out, and Luke's a former Navy team player who started.
Legend of a bloke.
Yeah, absolute ripper. Yeah, I got a lot of time for him. You know, I was really lucky to be there for most of his journey, you know, coaching him through the country pathway. Where he started in Echuca and has now, you know, kind of made his way, you know, down to the NBL as a development player and playing well and, you know, and like, you know, has an Opal talking about how, you know, how much of a good bloke he is. And, yeah, he just happened to be walking past and I said, hey, mate, do you mind just talking to the boys a little bit? And, you know, and so we said that there is a world in which if you just play hard and play together, people are going to see you, because that's happened before. There's a lot of guys that have come off the Navy team that are doing special things in the sport that you guys want to do. So if that's what you, you know, we're not ignorant to that. We know every individual wants to go on. You know, yes, it's about the team, but it's also about the players within it. So we try to really, yeah, draw on that as much as possible as well.
No, like it's a tough week. And when I say week, it's probably a tough month, because that under-20s tournament comes at the end of a fairly hectic work schedule for both of you in particular. By the time you go through East Coast, Cup, Southern
I've never
Cross.
Been more tired. And I don't think I've ever seen Coops as tired as he was last Tuesday.
True.
He was just a disheveled mess.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even fighting it?
Nah, no. It's true. Yeah. Just the case. I was a puddle. Like.
But that's the thing, you come off multiple camps and it's hard to continually be up and be the face of a program and those types of things when you and yourself are a little bit tired and just a little bit worn down and you're probably not at your best self just because of the schedule. It's not for any sinister reason. It's just one thing into the next thing, into the next thing, into the next thing. And the lack of prep makes that really hard tournament. So for anyone that does want to get involved in that Centre Navy team, by all means, put your hand up, apply for state teams when they come around, because it is a really good development opportunity for coaches to get involved with. Like, none of your coaches sat there and did nothing for the whole week. Like, I know both of you put them to work more than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Jenny, you're smiling at that?
Lauren Robinson just was up at all hours doing the scout on the other teams, cutting film, and she, yeah, was terrific. And then, as I said, Joe, being away all of January, she really took the load of taking trainings of the group. So I had two great assistants. And then Zoe came in and was great help for me, being my first team, coaching the team for the first time, to have her support and her knowledge behind me was, yeah, really great. So I couldn't be more thankful for my coaching staff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably something we need to look at a little bit more too, in particular with first-time head coaches going to a nationals. how we can better support them. Like, it's just one of those things. It's such a scary world.
It's a lot.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. Like, we joked about it a couple of times. Coops and I have been on staff together a number of times before, and it's like, assistant coach, best job in the world. Yeah. All care, no responsibility. If someone doesn't open up the gym, it's like, well, we didn't book it. We're good. Like, no worries. Yep. Like, you just move on pretty quickly, and then it's like, oh, I'm the head coach? Oh, that was my booking that didn't go through, or I had to bring the camera for this game, or, yeah, where's my whiteboard? Like, those types of things. There's so much more that goes on.
Yeah, I didn't realise.
It's a good spot to be.
I think the other thing too, just coming off the back of this, we're talking about development and getting better, is the directors of coaching in particular who have had athletes go on the Navy team, like especially like this time round. So if there's a player that's gone, I would highly recommend getting that player in and have a chat. Like, what was it like? What were areas that you fell short in that we could have done a better job in preparing you for? You know, like, go through that process, because we had some moments with athletes and they're like, I've never heard of that before. I don't know that terminology. I don't know that concept. And then it's a bit like, well, you know, there's a responsibility of your club to get you up to speed for that sort of thing. And
not difficult concepts either, I found. Mm. I thought they were quite basic things that we were asking, and it was, I've never heard of that before. Yeah. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay, well, we can go through it, and we did, and they learned. But, yeah, I feel like some of those things they should have known.
Yeah, they should have. And so, yeah, hopefully, you know, the coaches and directors of coaching will jump on that and utilize that opportunity to help grow their next crop of, for you sure. know, potential 20s guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And even have that player come in and talk to the group below them.
Yeah, love that.
So if they're an under-20s kid, come and talk to the 18s and the 16s about, okay, you might have missed state selection in 16s or 18s. This might be an opportunity for you, because we know the late developers really come through in that under-20s age group in particular.
Yeah.
That's a good opportunity to Luke Rosendale that thing,
yeah,
and come in and talk to the next group.
And I think this group of athletes that were coming through, a lot of them did miss out on nationals because of COVID.
Yeah, true.
So this really was their first shot at a nationals, which a lot of the women in my team just wanted to prove people wrong, that they were there, they've worked hard, they deserve to be there, and they wanted to prove some people wrong, and I think they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. And I think it's a really good thing for them now to go on to their senior careers. Like, it's a nice little taster early in the year. It's like, great, now go and continue to put into work, and I'm sure both of you will check box scores feverishly to see how they're going, because you've now got that connection with them. You want to see how they go. You're interested in the pathway for those kids. So I think it's a really good thing to be able to do for them as well. Thank you both for jumping in. Appreciate it. We are done for this week, coaches. Once again, if you do have any topics you want to hear discussed on here, shoot them in. I've got about half a dozen that coaches have sent in over the summer break that we'll gradually work through. But if there is anything in particular you want us to discuss, shoot it through and we'll get to it. But we will catch you all next week on the Talking Split Pod.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.